This is Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. From the heart of New York City and the tri-state area to the most active real estate hotspots across America, keeping you plugged in to the latest real estate market trends, from mortgage news and legal developments to everything you need to know about buying or selling a property, benefited by the advice of the experts. Now, here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back, and I am really thrilled to have Ryan Monell, who's the Vice President of Government Affairs for REBNY. And for those of you who don't know, REBNY is the Real Estate Board of New York. I don't want to compare it to MLSs. A lot of you who not New York City deal with MLSs, but I would say that REBNY has that portion, but it's far greater than that. And Ryan, thank you for being on our show. Maybe you would first tell everybody in the audience a little about REBNY and what REBNY does.
Yeah, sure. Well, number one, Dottie, thanks for having me on. It's a beautiful morning in New York. So really grateful to be able to talk to you. As you mentioned, I mean, the Real Estate Board of New York is sort of the ultimate trade association for all things real estate in New York City. It's been around for about 130 years. But as of the last, you know, as of recently, and as what we are today is effectively the ecosystem for all things real estate relevant to how we bring folks together, not only to network and to learn more about how to work together as an industry, but also offering folks opportunities for education. And then where I sort of fit into the organization, along with a number of my colleagues, is relevant to government affairs. And so there's a tremendous amount of work that happens behind the scenes, making sure that we have a finger on the pulse of everything happening in city, state, and federal government that could impact our membership. As you can imagine, there's always a lot going on, and so we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to, number one, understand exactly where our members sit in regards to the work they do every day and how we can go to bat for them up in Albany, at City Hall, and down in Washington, to make sure we're doing things as best we can to keep on moving the real estate industry forward. And so, you know, REBNY is made up of about 15,000 members. I like to say that we have about 15,000 bosses day in and day out. So whether you're an individual agent or one of the major owners in Manhattan, we certainly want to hear what's impacting you and your livelihood.
And I will tell you, it's a great organization, and the people are amazing, and I've learned so much. Maybe you could talk about a couple of things today. So maybe you can talk a little about what's going on and how REBNY is spearheading the industry's opposition to the city council legislation that would dramatically also how residential brokers' commissions will be paid. And also maybe something about how REBNY is, you know, trying to reform is how government administers housing vouchers, and a little about that.
Yeah, so two very important issues. So the first one you mentioned, a number of your listeners may remember, particularly if they work as agents, that 5 years ago at City Hall there was a bill that was proposed at that time that would cap a residential rental commission at 1 month's rent. And we responded to that by making it super easy for agents to participate in the democratic process. And over 1,000 agents showed up to City Hall when the bill had a hearing before the city council to say it was a bad idea. And by and large, what happened after that is the bill effectively didn't move forward. But fast forward 5 years, a different bill has been proposed by a council member in Brooklyn named Chiyose. Now, it doesn't cap a commission for a residential rental transaction of 1 month rent, but what it does say is that, and this really simplifies, I believe, the way the market actually works for rentals, what the bill effectively tries to do is say that unless you hire the agent, the transaction or the commission can't be paid by anyone else. So if you're the owner, for example, the fee can't be passed on to your prospective renter, or if you're the renter, you know, it sort of takes away the ability for an owner pay situation to happen in that regard if you choose to go with an agent to help you with your apartment search. So what we really believe that does is really takes away a lot of the opportunity to negotiate a fee and also takes away the ability for, in many instances, I think, renters in particular, to benefit from what potentially could be the best case scenario for them in keeping costs down for a rental. You know, we're doing the same thing this time around we did 5 years ago. We believe that when agents show up and speak about how this impacts their ability to work with their clients and to service their clients to the best of their ability, it makes a huge difference at City Hall. So we're hoping as many agents as possible will come forward to push back and say, hey, this idea actually probably goes in the wrong direction relevant to, you know, reducing costs for many renters out there. But also, of course, will have an impact in my ability to maintain the relationship I have professionally with the owners I work to represent, and also for my bottom line relative to how I make my commissions year over year. And by the way, most agents out there themselves are renters and, quite honestly, you know, are middle class or working class people themselves. So we want to make sure that we're supporting everyone in New York City by putting forth good policies opposed to those types of policies that actually might go in the wrong direction. And so yes, what we're really asking for folks is on June 12th at 10 a.m., the City Council will hold a hearing, and we're hoping that folks come out to voice opposition to the bill. And Revenue in particular, if you go to our website, revenue.com, you can learn more about the bill, and we want to make sure we're doing everything we can to allow for folks who want to participate.
Yeah, and let me just say this. If you've ever tried to do a rental or anything in Manhattan, it's a whole different can of worms, okay? It's different. Yeah. It's and navigating through it is a lot different than any other place. And a lot of times when we get customers that come from other states, they are totally confused in how things work. And Remedy does everything really to support the industry and to support the people that are going to buy and rent. And so they do a lot of great things, and they have a very big influence, and I fully support them. So what's going on with affordability? You know, it's a really big issue now. Housing affordability, rentals are high. I mean, they've gone down a teeny bit, but not really. What are some of the things that you're working on to help affordability and things of that nature?
Yeah, so a few things. So number one, I wanted to mention a report that Remy put out yesterday, actually, that we think is really important because it really impacts what we believe is programs that will help the most in need in our city relevant to their ability to find housing and to afford housing. And those are the voucher programs that work relative to whether it's Section 8 vouchers, which a lot of folks are familiar with, or City FEPS, which is a voucher program that has sort of emerged more prevalently over the last couple of years. The city funds through their budget year over year that over time is actually increasing the number of vouchers that are allocated. The problem that we see, quite honestly, with our membership, but also from speaking to other organizations that service a lot of residents or New Yorkers in need, is that the programs are just fundamentally ineffective because they're not facilitated appropriately. Overly bureaucratic, poor lines of communication, technology is not utilized. It sort of reflects where private transaction is able to utilize technology. And so yesterday we actually partnered with WIM, Women in Need, which is an organization run by Christine Quinn, who many remember ran for mayor, was a former city council speaker. You know, Women in Need is sort of one of the ultimate organizations in terms of working with the shelter population in particular to make sure we can get them into permanent housing. And so we partnered with WIN to put out a 30-page report that goes into pretty significant detail relevant to what we believe we can do to make these voucher programs work more effectively. And why we really care about it,
say, can you tell us a little about the voucher programs? I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that.
Yeah, so effectively what they are is, you know, by and large, whether it's a Section 8 voucher or the City Fest voucher, you know, if you're eligible based off of your income or a previous stint in a city homeless shelter, by and large, you're likely eligible to utilize a voucher to help offset and identify opportunities to pay for rent. what we see, unfortunately, happening is that even though those vouchers are available, the problem is relevant to when they go to be utilized by a prospective renter. The city's inability to get out of its own way really sort of prevents them to be able to be utilized effectively.
Right.
And so,
right.
You know, we think that it's actually great for owners, for agents, and for renters alike because, you know, for an owner, right, it's if they work effectively, I mean, you have effectively what is a guaranteed rent month over
exactly.
month. Exactly. For your renter. But what we've seen, unfortunately, is that in many instances, if someone approaches an owner or is working with an agent who holds a voucher, you know, oftentimes the inability for the city to be able to approve that voucher leads to delays that oftentimes are upwards to 2 to 3 months.
Wow.
So if you're an owner and you're approached by a voucher holder, a problem that we've seen is that oftentimes you're not seeing rent realized for over 3 months, which is a huge problem, obviously. And then for an agent, you know, oftentimes these voucher programs also pay for your fee, but we're also seeing that payment standard delayed significantly to where, you know, a fee isn't being realized either for weeks, if not months on end. And so tremendous problem. You know, the other issue here is that, obviously, everyone who works in and around real estate understands the importance of fair housing. And fair housing law has changed considerably over the last couple of years in particular. You know, we believe it's really important that everyone who, and by and large, of course, folks want to be good faith and good partners relevant to anyone trying to find housing in New York City. But we believe it's really important to make sure that we're educating and supporting fair housing law as best as we can. The problem that we've seen around the voucher programs is that, you know, the inability for the programs to work effectively oftentimes is being misconstrued by a number of prospective tenants who hold vouchers as discrimination. And what that ultimately then opens up for owners and agents alike is a really untenable situation to where, number one, you're having to figure out how to identify opportunities to get someone into a unit and hitting considerable roadblocks based off of the fact that the city can't get out of its own way bureaucratically. But then when that delay continues to happen from month over month, you know, the tenant oftentimes misconstrues that as being discrimination based off of the fact that they're unable to get into that unit. And so it's really a bad situation we're putting everyone in, which is why we decided to go comprehensively along with WIN Women in Need to figure out ways to make these programs work more effectively. And so I encourage those who interact with the voucher programs, whether you're an owner, a manager, or an agent, to take a look at our report. We want to make sure we're transacting not only into getting more traction from other stakeholders who may be interested in joining us on this effort, but you know, ultimately the idea is that we actually pass new city law to make these things work more effectively.
So, but in shortage, because I've seen that, when people have vouchers, a lot of people don't want to take them because of all the red tape and all the complications. So
yep.
They become virtually useless to someone.
Right, right.
So
yeah,
I think
that's unfortunate, you know?
It is. But I think that people don't really realize if you're an owner and somebody is getting assistance through vouchers, you're guaranteed your rent, okay? You're guaranteed
yeah.
that you're going to get paid your rent. You never have to worry that someone's going to miss a payment. And
right.
You do have to worry if you don't, you know, with anybody, you would have to worry if somebody doesn't pay. And I think also, I found in New York, I think it's really different in California because I've opened offices there also. But I think in New York, if somebody doesn't pay rent, and I always try to look at two sides because I say for something to be good, for a deal to be a good deal, it has to be good for two parties, not just one. It's got to be good for both parties. So it's got to be good for the owner and it's got to be good for the renter or the buyer. So I just think people have a misconception about that all.
Yeah, look, I think most reasonable people would say that if a program that is set forth to help a tenant pay for their rent, doesn't actually pay a landlord rent, you know, month over month, just like a cash paying tenant would do. So that's a program that's not working effectively. And that's really what we're seeing right now, along with the same real situation to where, you know, the city by and large is in many instances asking an agent to support a voucher holder in finding an apartment and saying, look, we're going to pay you 1 month's rent to do so and as a fee. And then after they find an apartment, that fee isn't realized or the city backs out on that agreement. And so it's just like fundamentally puts a voucher holder on an unfair playing ground with a cash holding tenant. So that's what we really want to. That's what
you
we really
want
to try to prevent.
Equitable. You want to make that equitable because I don't think that it's operating. It's supposed to, but it's, you know, a lot of times on paper something looks okay. But I always say that, you know, I never just sat in an office and, you know, sometimes people get too far away from what's really going on the ground. Okay? And they kind
that's
of miss what's, you know what I'm saying? They just, they get promoted, and all of a sudden they're in this place and they lost touch with what's really going on every day with regular people.
I think we see that all too often, unfortunately, in certain parts of government. And so that's why we put this report out to hopefully, you know, educate more folks who are making these types of decisions relative to what we think needs to be done and looking at what we've heard from folks on the ground, right? The agents, the owners, the renters, in regards to what isn't working right.
Yes, and that's what I love about Revenue. And I mean, I couldn't tell you all the differences with MLS and Revenue, but I know that Revenue is not only about real estate brokers and real estate companies and real estate agents. It's about people who own real estate and people who don't
Okay,
and so you have a mix of both. So you hear both sides because you got to look at both sides because if you are an owner, why would you want to buy any investments or properties in New York if you don't know that you'll ever get paid? And let's face it, in New York, I can only speak for New York, but I can tell you that in New York, if you, somebody doesn't pay rent and you want to foreclose on them, that could take forever.
There's a lot of steps in place relative to eviction in New York City or New York State. That's correct.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, we want to try to do everything we can to keep folks in their homes. And what we see is, by and large, in many instances, folks who are facing eviction have an inability to pay, which is another reason why these voucher programs need to work effectively, right? Because if you can offset that. But the other aspect is, you know, we got to do what we got to do to make sure that owners, you know, have rights too, and that there's structure in place to make sure those who want to invest in their properties and do the right things to maintain the warrant of habitability and house New Yorkers have the ability to do so as well. And unfortunately, I think right now what we're seeing is it's harder and harder to do so year over year. And
yeah.
So one of the other things that Revenue is oftentimes focused on is making sure that we're going to bat for policies to make that, you know, make business easier relevant to your ability to house New Yorkers if you choose to do so.
So when you were talking in the beginning of the show and you said Revenue rules will prevent the listing broker from paying buyer agents and instead will require sellers to pay the commissions directly.
Yeah.
So I think we have a break coming.
Yeah.
I'd just like you to talk about that a little bit and how that's helpful for both parties. And also you just reenacted, we had an incentive for, you know, if a builder was building, if they put affordable housing in there, and then that expired. And I think you just brought that back, didn't you? We're going to talk a little about that. We'll be right back with Ryan Monell, Vice President of Government Affairs for Revenue. And you should go to the website and learn about Revenue, especially if you're going to be living in the city. We'll be right back with Ryan Monell after a quick break.
Oh. Over the last 30 years, Newman Ferrara, a New York City law firm, has evolved into a national practice focused on real estate, commercial, litigation, civil rights, class actions, and other complex litigation, representing many of the city's largest property owners, managing agents, and thousands of tenants. Newman Ferrara handles some of the nation's most significant class actions and civil rights matters. Newman Ferrara at 1250 Broadway in New York City. Go online to NewmanFerrara.com. That's NewmanFerrara.com. Listen to the firm's named partner, Lucas Ferrara, every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Dottie Herman's longest-running real estate radio program, Eye on Real Estate on AM 970. A real estate lawyer for 35 years, Lucas is a professor at New York Law School and is also a published author with books on real estate and New York's landlord-tenant law. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. to hear Lucas's unique perspective and advice on Eye on Real Estate.
Hi, it's Arthur Idala here for Bay Ridge Honda, run by my family friend, Rob Sabah. The family owned and operated Honda dealer for over 60 years, serving the five boroughs. I get my cars here, my whole family does. My mother and father, sister, brother-in-law, everyone I know goes to Bay Ridge Honda because Rob Sabah and his team are the best and most trusted in the business. Memorial Day savings all month long. Win big prizes and save big money. Your car has never been worth more than right now. Bay Ridge Honda wants to give you top dollar for your trade-in and get you into a brand new Honda. Trade in your car to Bay Ridge Honda and enter to win a 65-inch TV, a $500 gift card, or a PlayStation 5. Hands down, the best Honda dealer in Brooklyn. Top-notch customer service where everyone is taken care of and the team will work to get you into the perfect vehicle. Every new purchase comes with the Bay Ridge Plus ding and dent coverage, key replacement, windshield protection, roadside assistance, and the Honda Service Pass. Every new vehicle comes with their Bay Ridge Plus package for all of your service maintenance needs. Visit Bay Ridge Honda, 4th Avenue and 88th Street in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, or online at BayRidgeHonda.com.
At Broadway House for Continuing Care, they never back down from a challenge. Their healthcare professionals handle complex medical conditions that other facilities can't. The New Beginnings Subacute Rehabilitation Program treats people with a variety of conditions, from diabetes and stroke to brain and spinal cord injuries, fractures, and more. Often they require comprehensive long-term care, including medical treatment, behavioral health care, and social services support. Over months and sometimes years, the medical professionals at Broadway House patiently work with residents to treat their condition and connect them with resources to help them live independently once again. Broadway House consistently earns 5-star ratings from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the national organization's highest rating. But while awards are great, they measure success in the restored health of their residents. Learn more at BroadwayHouse.org. BroadwayHouse.org.
Continuing with Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. Here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back and we're with Ryan Monell, who's the vice president of government affairs for REBNY, Real Estate Board of New York. And we're just talking about that. And, you know, Ryan, in the beginning of the show, I told everyone that home affordability is the worst it's been since 1984, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not, and the lack of affordability is not expected to improve much in the near future. So what are some of the things that, you know, people should know or do, or how can they get involved, to, or you know, especially in the city, it's high. What are some of the things that people can look for? And you, I know, have reenacted some incentives for builders to build and have affordable housing. You want to talk a little about that? Because I know that expired.
So, you know, year over year, I mean, one thing that REBNY is really focused on is working with the state legislature in regards to focusing on how we can really solve for the affordability crisis that you're talking about. And, you know, one of the things that we fundamentally believe, we did a report at the beginning of 2022 that at that time demonstrated a need for probably approximately 560,000 units to be built to keep pace with population in New York City between now and 2030. We are way, way short of being able to do that. In the last month, the governor enacted a budget that in part included a new production tool that replaced 421A, referred to as 45X. REBNY was at the forefront of really fighting for a new production tool. We have been pretty vocal relevant to what we believe are some shortfallings for what was actually and ultimately passed. We believe that it doesn't do enough to incentivize those who want to build in New York City to do so. And so, unfortunately, I think, you know, there's more that needs to be done to educate our elected officials relevant to what we need in regards to an environment that would make it easier for folks to build in this city, in this state. The other thing that I think is really important that a lot of folks who are owners in particular are saying is that, you know, it's really, really difficult these days to maintain existing affordable housing, particularly rent-stabilized housing. And in 2019, there were a number of rent laws that were passed that really put new caps on what you can do to recover to help offset capital improvements for your rent-stabilized buildings year over year. So something in particular that was really a focus for this year was a program called IAI, or Individual Apartment Improvements, which would effectively allow for you to amortize capital improvements into rent for stabilized buildings and stabilized apartments month over month. And right now, the cap for that, which was also just recently raised, still is not high enough to really actually reflect where data says stabilized capital improvements are needed. And so, you know, what that really leads to is a number of units that, you know, maybe haven't been improved for a long time because a tenant has been there and just recently vacated after 40 years, for example. You know, you're not able to recover relative to making any capital improvement for that unit, and so therefore that unit sits vacant. And so it's a big problem, right, because any unit offline is one unit too many that could otherwise be rented. And what we're seeing that really result in is just higher overall rents across the city. So until we really figure out how to make meaningful improvements in our policy, which we believe, unfortunately, this last budget didn't really amount to, we're going to continue to see, I think, rising costs in housing in New York.
Yeah, we've seen it pretty much all over. You know, I hope that you'll come back because we could talk about this for a lot longer. There's a lot more that I'd love to talk about. But just in summary, what would you say, where would you say the city is with, I mean, I know we're short, we have a shortage of buildings, of rental apartments, and obviously you want to be fair to a renter, or a buyer, but you also have to look at the other side of it, and somebody who owns properties is not going to buy and invest in properties. And if they have no money because they can't get it or somebody doesn't pay, then they can't improve them. And, you know, you want the quality of people's lives to be good where they live also. So how can people get involved? What can they do to be involved? And where would you tell them to go? Go to this Revney site? Would you give us some information so that people can learn more? And I hope that you'll come back again because there's so much more we should talk about.
Well, Dottie would always love to come back and talk to you. I would encourage anyone who's interested in learning more about what Revney does to visit our website, revney.com. You know, again, I mean, we're really at the forefront of making sure we're fighting for the industry here in New York. But also we want to make sure that folks who maybe don't work in the industry every day, but are interested in regards to what you can do to help alleviate housing costs in this area. Look, everything we do is data-driven. We really try to point to the facts on the ground in terms of what needs to happen to make New York better. Because honestly, if you know, for real estate to be successful, New York City, New York State has to be successful. And so we want to do what's right for New Yorkers, and we certainly are trying to do that every day. And so we really appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you today.
I'm thrilled that you're on, and let's face it. You know, from the pandemic, you know, New York's come a long way, and it still has ways to go, but it's really, really got back on its feet. And I know I had Governor Pataki on. I have him on every 9/11 on my show because he was the governor then. And that's what he said. I said, well, what would you do if you were the governor today? What would you do? And he said, look, I would try to give incentives for people to build more housing. He might look at zoning changes. And he would make sure that the city is safe because everybody wants to be in a safe place. And I think that if anybody watched TV in the last couple of days and they saw how the New York City Police Department really handled the crises with the college, was just really, they were just pros. We have the best police force going. So I love New York.
Greatest city on earth.
Yeah, I love New York. There's no place like it. And I hope that everyone goes on Remini's site. And please come back. I'd love to share. I'd have a lot more to ask and have people know about.
We're happy to do so, Dottie. You have a great Saturday.
You too.
Take care. Thanks for having us. All right.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Have a good week. Okay. Well, there's so much we could talk about. You know, the time just goes so quickly. There's so many things going on now. And when it comes to New York, and again, I've been working in New York for about 20-something years, but prior to that, I was on Long Island. And, you know, not that it's different. It's just a whole other ball. It's just very different. It's harder to navigate. And I really don't suggest anyone try to do anything in New York without a really good New York City broker, because it's very hard to navigate. It's a lot different. And Remini is a great organization, and it has, I've learned so much. So I'm so glad to have him. Now I'm thrilled to have Amy Pennington, who is an urban gardening expert and the author of Tiny Spaces, gardening. And I think Amy has done God knows how many books. I mean, Amy, are you there?
I am here. Hello.
Okay. I'm so glad to have you. I mean, I don't know
Thank
if I
you.
Have a green thumb, but you're a gardener. You're a writer.
Has a green thumb.
Okay. Then you're going to tell us, and you're around and about, and how many books have you written?
I think six. I think
Ooh.
Six.
Yeah. So, and just before we start, how do people find your books?
Well, so they're all on my website, and that's a good place because I talk about them a little bit more than you would find on Amazon or something. I tell you what you can find, and that way you know if it's the right book for you. And so my website is my name. It's amy-pennington.com.
Okay. And for those of you who are driving or don't have a pen handy, or going to listen to us at a different time, because you can get this at any time, I will post that so that if you didn't get a chance to write it, I will post it, and you can go to Amy's website. So, Amy, Great. How did you become, how did this all happen for you? How did you get involved in urban gardening?
It's a little bit of a wild story. So I grew up on Long Island before it was really developed. It was pretty farmy out there, and I grew up on a little hobby farm out in Farmingville, funny enough. And we grew all of our own food. We had goats that we used for dairy, and we had chickens that we raised for meat. We were just like a little tiny farm. So I kind of had it in me from when I was a kid. But when you're a kid, your parents make you do it, and it feels like a chore. And, you know, nobody likes to do it. It's not like we ever celebrated gardening when we were young. And then as an adult, I worked for a chef in Seattle's most eminent celebrity chef, I would say. His name is Tom Douglas. And wow. Because I was around food and chefs all the time, I had a real interest in growing food. And then I wanted to grow food that you could not buy in the grocery store. So like anybody could go to the grocery store and buy a bunch of mint, but you cannot go to the grocery store and buy a bunch of lemon verbena. And so I wanted to start growing some of these like really specialized ingredients. And at the same time, a friend had a client who I don't even know what he did for this client, honestly, but he said they wanted to grow. They brought home their tomato seed from their nonna's house in Italy, and they wanted to grow it in Seattle. And he said, "You have to grow these tomato plants." And I said,
You're going to give us a cliffhanger. We have a quick commercial break. We have a cliffhanger, and then you'll come back and continue your story, because it's a great story. We'll be right back with Amy Pennington, who is an urban gardening expert. I really want to hear all of her tips. We'll be right back. Quick commercial break, and Amy will be back.
I love bringing you products that improve your life. Well, this product can save a life. There are 5,000 choking deaths in the U.S. annually. One child dies every 5 days from choking. Older adults are also at increased risk of choking. Foods eaten by the handful, like popcorn, grapes, peanuts, they get overloaded in the mouth, cause a choking episode. LifeVac is a simple rescue device that can change a life in a choking emergency. It's non-invasive and easy to use. If you have a young child or a senior relative, I strongly recommend you visit the LifeVac website today at lifevac.net. View the videos demonstrating its ease of use. LifeVac works in three simple steps: place, push, pull. The LifeVac device dislodges the obstruction and suctions out the food or object. It's that simple, and it can be self-administered. LifeVac.net.
Craving that signature Sunday sauce? Michael's of Brooklyn will make your place a must. Join Michael's of Brooklyn Sauce of the Month Club. Receive a different jar of Michael's of Brooklyn pasta sauce, homemade pasta and biscotti each month for 6 months. Make your home the place to be with Michael's of Brooklyn signature fresh marinara right in your home. Visit michaelsofbrooklyn.com and order online. That's michaelsofbrooklyn.com. Michael's of Brooklyn, serving the community since 1964.
St. James Health is a community health center located in the East, West, and South Ward of Newark, New Jersey. The goal of St. James Health is to bring comprehensive primary care to the community in a setting that is comfortable and accommodating to all visitors of St. James Health, regardless of their ability to pay. With three locations serving the Newark community, 228 Lafayette Street, 332 South 8th Street, and 491 Clinton Avenue, St. James Health has served just over 5,300 unique patients and completed over 17,000 medical visits in 2023. All services are currently offered in English, Spanish, and Portuguese, accepting all insurances, including Medicare and Medicaid, as well as self-pay. 973-789-8111. That's 973-789-8111. With services including adult medicine, pediatrics, gynecology, and pharmacy services, visit stjameshealth.com. StJamesHealth.com.
Hi, folks. It's Arthur Idala of the Power Hour. Every night here on AM 970 at 6 p.m., we try to bring you a lot of fun, a lot of energy, with a lot of facts, a lot of inside scoop from the courtroom and from the streets of the city of New York, with our special guests and our regular co-hosts, Sambolino, Joni, Alex, and whoever happens to be walking around the office. Tune in weeknights at 6 p.m.
AM 970, The Answer.
Continuing with Eye on Real Estate, your premier source for real estate information. Here's the host of Eye on Real Estate, the vice chair of Douglas Elliman, Dottie Herman.
We're back, and we're talking with Amy Pennington, urban gardening expert, the author of one of her books, Tiny Space Gardening, and we're talking about gardening in an apartment or small outdoor spaces. And before we get into that, you were in the middle of finishing a story of how you got involved with this to begin with, so you want to just continue?
Yes, so my friend Jimmy had clients who brought their Nona's tomato seed back home from Italy, and they wanted to grow the tomatoes that Nona used in Italy back in Seattle, where I was living at the time. And my friend Jimmy said, "You have to grow the tomatoes." And I said, "You're insane. I don't know how to grow food. I don't know what you're talking about." And he said, "Shut up. You know everything about food and farms. You can do it." And that's how it all happened. So I started doing it for them. And then it grew and grew and grew just naturally over the years. And then probably after like 3 years of just doing it for fun with a few people in their backyard, where I grew food for them. So I didn't eat it. They ate it. I grew it. I started my business.
Okay. So now, how much space would you need to plant an urban garden? Is there a specific amount of space?
Yeah, there's really not. Funny enough, I always joke, people would be like, "What does your garden look like?" And I would say, about 5 pots, because I had a balcony. I lived in an apartment my whole life. I never grew anything in the ground as an adult that I owned. So you can really get by with a small garden bed, you know, that's like 4 feet long and 4 feet wide, just a little square. It could be small. It could just be a few pots. It just depends on the space that you have and really like how much time and how much skill set you have. A lot of people oftentimes bite off more than they can chew. You know, it's probably like that with home renovation projects too.
Yes.
It's like all of a sudden you're painting and molding and doing on, you're like, whoa, slow down, just choose one. So I think like one or two garden beds to start for a year or two is a perfect amount for the average person who owns a piece of property with a little slice of land.
Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to do this but have no clue on how to start or what they need.
Yep.
Is there special equipment required? Is there special light source required? What do you need to begin? Is there anything that you need initially to begin to do this?
Not really. Here's the beautiful thing about urban farming, Dottie, especially small spaces. We just want to think about small spaces. So you literally just need a pot that's maybe 12 to 18 inches deep, however big or wide or long you want it to be is totally fine, and some potting soil and some seeds or plant starts, and that's it. And then you need water and you need sunlight. You need some kind of a light to grow food. So, you know, hypothetically, if you're in the city or you're in Queens or Brooklyn or something and you have a little balcony and you face north, you're going to be more challenged than someone who faces south and gets like full sun, right? Plants need sun. And it's very easy to keep plants alive, actually. That's no problem. The issue is when we talk about urban farming, meaning you're growing something so that it actually produces something that you can harvest and eat from the plant, you do want it to be sort of an optimal condition, because then the plant is healthy and prospers and you can cut something off and it will grow back and cut something off and it will grow back. You don't want to just kind of keep something alive. You want to keep something productive.
Well, that's a good point. So you're saying you don't need special equipment.
Yep.
So I guess you would say, if I said, what's the best spot to grow in your apartment, I guess wherever there's light, or what would you say is?
Exactly. So if you have a south facing, west facing, even east facing, my balcony faced due east. So it would get sunlight from whenever the sun hit the horizon until about 11 a.m. or 12 p.m. That's good. That's plenty of sun. You can grow a lot of things. It depends on what you're growing or like what your space allots for. Most people have usually minimal sunlight. So I'm going to say most people can grow things like simple greens. That's all of your herbs, lettuces, scallions, maybe some radishes, just like smaller plants that don't demand a lot. They're not going to take a lot of calorie and energy to produce. Most everybody can do that. So that's a great place to start, and anyone can do that regardless of where, even if you have a north-facing balcony or window, you can try something small like that and just kind of see how it goes.
And your advice is to start small, right? Don't
try to... I would say, yes. I mean, you're in New York, and you're in the city, and, like, you know, it's not... People don't have big backyards, really, until you get a little further out on the island. So I'm just assuming that everyone's going to be growing in smaller spaces. So you get it just as big of a box as you can. And if you can only grow something on your windowsill, that's totally fine too. There's other projects. You don't have to grow something in a pot. You can sprout seeds. And like sprouting seeds is a 3 or 4 day project. You start it on day one. It's ready to eat on day four. They're delicious. They're nutritious. They give you a nice pop of flavor in salads or like a garnish over fish or something. So that's like a really easy little urban farming project that you can do just on a countertop. You don't even need sunlight for that. So there's options for everybody, really, to grow something at home. No, and if you think about like those sandwiches in the 80s everyone was eating and had like cream cheese, cucumbers, and those sprouts, right? That's what I'm talking about. Those sprouts, you can just grow those on your countertop, and they're actually really good, because it used to be that they just sprouted little radish greens, and so it just tasted sort of like a bitter green, which is delicious. But you can sprout basil seeds and just have like a big handful of little basil seeds, basil sprouts, you know, and throw those on top of a soup or a salad, in a smoothie, something like that. And they're delicious. It's fresh, it's green. You grew it.
I think everybody would like to do that. I just think that they don't think it's possible if they don't have land.
Exactly.
Or they don't, you know, I just think don't think they even it even comes up in their mind that they could even do that. So that's why it's so yep. interesting to have you. So you say you don't really need equipment.
Nope.
You don't really have to have a green thumb, that you can read your book and you can start out slow and do it in a slow process, but you don't have to be someone who's a gardener. Is there
no, you don't have to be a gardener. And you just have to be attentive. I think it helps to be empathic or like compassionate. I think people have brown thumbs or they do poorly when they have plants for two reasons. One is they either neglect it, meaning like they don't like plants. If you're growing food at home, you have to water that thing every day. It's not a like once a week kind of a thing. You have to really get out there every day, even on gray days, even when you think it's not hot. They need water to survive. Like you drink water every day. The plant needs yes. water every day. You also, if you someone came up to you at nighttime and threw water all over your jeans, you would be cold. So, like, don't water your plants at nighttime. They don't like it. Their roots are going to get all freezing overnight. It's going to get chilly. You know, nobody wants to be cold overnight. So, like, water in the morning. You just have to think like a plant. Like, start treating it, personify your plant a little bit, and that will get people, like, really far because you start really tending to it. Plants indicate to us all the time when they're upset in some way. Their leaves get crispy, crunchy. They curl in. They tuck under. They droop. You know, and anyone can look at a plant and go like, I don't think that's doing too good. And, you know, the first identifying factor is water, and the second is sunlight. So if you're not watering, water every day. And if it's not in the sun, try and pull it into the sun and see if that changes things. Give it like 5 days and see. Plants are very receptive. They can... If you catch it early enough, you can really bring them back from the brink.
So for those of us like me who were, I have a house out in the country, so there it's not a problem. But I do have an apartment in the city, which I've never thought about doing that, and I am going to try it. And when you're on again, which I hope you will be, I will let you know how
sure.
I'm doing. What are some of the challenges, you know, what if somebody who's just starting and wants to, to at least attempt to try to do this, what would mm-hmm. be, are there any challenges or how would you?
Yeah, there's challenges. I mean, I think the biggest challenge is space. You know, it's like finding the right space because, and people talk about this. I'm a truth teller, okay? I actually want you to grow food. I want people to grow food. I want them to feel empowered to grow a little something that they can put on their table and share with their friends and family. So I do not actually think that you can just throw a pot on a windowsill and everything will do great. It doesn't really work that way. Plants need soil. They need room to grow. Their little feet get caught. If you put it in a little tiny pot, there's going to be nowhere to go and there's going to be nowhere for it to grow. It just won't. It won't die. It will sit there green, but it's not going to like grow and put out a leaf for you to harvest, right? So the biggest challenge is always going to be space because windowsills just by nature can't hold a big pot that's 12 inches deep. It just doesn't work that way. Like you all need shallow things. So that's your biggest, everyone's biggest challenge is going to be that. If you could put a little table in the window and elevate it, you know, so it's actually getting some sunlight, that's great. You can also use like those tiny little pots that you buy at Trader Joe's or something. Those
yes.
are fine. Those can keep an herb alive. They usually fit on the windowsill. But it is a challenge because it's small. You know, like you're not going to get a lot out of it, and you have to sort of really pay attention to it. So that is probably the biggest challenge. And then if you're in the city, it's sourcing plants and the potting soil, et cetera. All the neighborhoods have hardware stores, really, all of them.
Amy.
And then, yeah.
We're running out of time. You have to come on again because there's so much I have to ask you and so many questions
okay.
and so many people are writing in that they want to hear more. And for right now, you should go to www.amypennington.com. Amy, promise me you'll come back again. There's so much more we need to talk about. And this is something I know personally I'd like to do this. And I know my listeners are emailing me at the moment saying, tell us more. So please promise you'll come back again.
I will, and I'm just going to correct you on the website. You need a little hyphen between the Amy and the Pennington. Otherwise, you'll end up with a photographer's website in Minnesota.
Oh, okay. www.amy-pennington.com.
The preceding hour of programming paid for by DTHY Realty Incorporated.